Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, welcome. This is Paul Hitchcock. We're just going to give it a few minutes, let people start to join. Really excited about the presentation, but we'll hang here for about another minute, and then we're going to jump into it. As I see more and more people coming on board, want to respect your time. But thanks for being here. Let's make a note here. Okay. All right. I say we kick it off. We're at the top of the hour here. Want to be mindful of everybody's time. Hello, everyone. My name is Paul Hitchcock, and I'm really excited to have these two guests on here today. We've got Harry Barth, who is the founder and senior managing partner of the asset protection, estate planning, and business planning firm Barth Calderone, LLP, headquartered in Southern California with clients across the country. And Harry is a top speaker. We put on about 40 workshops a year to many incredible organizations, including Vistage, Tiger 21, the Women Presidents Organization, and many others. So he's in high demand in this very hot topic, Corporate Transparency Act, which we're going to get into in a minute here. I also want to thank David Perdue for being here, who is an incredible Vistage chair in Florida. So gentlemen, welcome both.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
And so as we get into this, want to mention to those joining here, I put a link in the chat. And as you get into this, a lot of questions are going to come up. We're going to have Q&A. Please feel free to type your questions along the way. David, if you can handle those questions as they come up, you know, with Harry. But the link I put in there is we've had a lot of people that have requested to get one-on-one for a complimentary assessment on their situations that pertains to this new law and what's going on. So click that link. That gets you connected to that. I am recording this, so we're going to send the replay out to everybody that signed up. And with that, I want to start with David. If you could let people know who the heck you are and what you're doing.
Hey, welcome. David Perdue with Vistage in outside of Sarasota, Florida. So I am a building chair here in the Sarasota, Manatee counties, DeSoto counties, kind of going down to southern tip of Hillsborough and southern tip of Pinellas counties, and getting ready to launch, should be launching next month. And so if you're interested in a peer advisory group, please feel free to give me a contact and we'll get together and discuss the opportunity. Looking for some members in the technology arena and manufacturing in particular. So that's kind of us in a nutshell.
Wonderful. We'll send out your contact information with the replay if anybody wants to get connected with you for sure. Harry, what do we need to know about the CTA?
Okay. Well, David, Paul, thank you. Great to be here. And hopefully, within the next hour, everyone who's joining us will know a little bit more about the lovely Corporate Transparency Act as thrust upon us by the United States government. So let me start a little bit with a few definitions, which will be helpful. I'll be using the term throughout my talk, FinCEN. So people, what is FinCEN? That's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network is a division of the United States Department of Treasury. So the Treasury Department has the FinCEN network, and the FinCEN network is the government agency that is responsible for enforcing the Corporate Transparency Act. So you'll hear me talk about FinCEN quite a bit. You'll also, let's understand that this Corporate Transparency Act, which we'll learn about today, was passed by bipartisan legislation in early 2021 and was supposed to be enacted in 22, delayed, 23, delayed, and launched January 1st, 2024. And the purpose of the act actually really got started historically with the 9/11 disaster, and the government has been trying ever since to reach the financing, who's financing terrorism, money laundering, tax evasion, where they're using small to medium-sized businesses as front companies and shell companies to hide the nefarious activity that they have. So we have the Patriot Act, we have Know Your Client, we have Sarbanes-Oxley, all the government's attempt to try to learn, and this is important for today, who were the human beings behind the veil of the entities. So it's not targeted for large businesses. This is targeted for small businesses, the hair salon, all right, the small barbershop, the small manufacturing. This is its target because it's in this area where the illicit activities take place. So understand that's important, really important for today. Who are the humans behind the veils? So talking about the veils, what are the veils? So every single corporation, limited liability company, limited partnership, limited liability partnership, an entity that's formed. So in Florida, you go to the Secretary of State's office in Tallahassee and say, hey, we want to give birth to an LLC in Florida. When that LLC is born, the moment that it gets its date, we have 90 days from that time to bring that new entity into compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act, which I'm going to talk about. And for all of the 33 million businesses that existed prior to January 1st, 2024, they don't get a pass. Every one of them under current law needs to be registered under the Corporate Transparency Act under current law by December 31st of this year. I don't know how they're going to do it, but it's a little challenging. Are they serious about this? Well, here's the deal. For every day that an entity is not in compliance, it's now a $591 a day civil fine. And if one willfully does not comply with the Corporate Transparency Act, it's a $10,000 criminal fine and up to 2 years in jail. It's a felony. So they're serious. They're very strict enforcement regulations that are coming to play. Now, let's understand a little bit about some legislation and some court cases that are floating around that will impact everything we're talking about today. So, court case. The National Small Business Association of America has brought a court case in district court in Alabama, which is moving its way through the federal judicial system, trying to have the Corporate Transparency Act declared unconstitutional. I've been doing this for close to 50 years, Devin, and here's my sense of that. I think that there may be parts of the Corporate Transparency Act that may be declared unconstitutional. We'll talk about those when I talk about specifics. But I think overall, it's going to stick. And the reason it's going to stick is that most modern Western economies and modern Eastern economies already have legislation similar to the Corporate Transparency Act. And we even to do a notary. I mean, you got to put down your address and the driver's license and fingerprints, God knows what. So we're already there. So this is not that much new. The other thing to know is that the database that is being built when we register our entities with FinCEN is allegedly and hopefully remains not public. This is strictly for law enforcement utilization. So if we create an LLC in Wyoming, for example, where the managers and the members of the LLC are not public, or in Delaware, which is consistently used by so many people for privacy, asset protection, and estate planning purposes, it'll still remain private. This is a registry of who are the humans behind the entities, which is not a public entity. So I think the constitutionality, not so much in question. The other piece of legislation that's floating around that's been passed by the House, not yet passed by the Senate, and not signed by Mr. Biden, is a modification to the Corporate Transparency Act. Let me share with you what the modifications are in that act. Two parts are okay. One part's not okay. One part basically says that for changes, you're going to learn about changes. Right now, we only have 30 days to make a change under the Corporate Transparency Act. It would extend the time limit to 90 days to make a change, which is more reasonable. And it would extend the time for pre-existing entities before January 1st, 2024 to extend the time that they have to come into compliance December 31st, 2025. So basically give us an extra year. But the draconian part of that legislation should have passed, and most likely it will, because it's mostly about extending time periods, is that FinCEN has been instructed by Congress not to even accept a filing unless it's complete. And we're going to talk about what that means. So if there are 20 identifying factors that have to come for that particular entity, if we have 19 of the 20, there are no exceptions. They will not accept it, and we could move into the area of non-compliance and a $591 a day fine. Okay. So given the fact that all of these entities are reporting entities, and we'll talk about reporting in a moment, there are exemptions to this. So we would need to go through what the exemptions are. I think that's very important. So these are the entities that do not have to give the qualifying information to FinCEN under the Corporate Transparency Act. Large public companies, David, do not have to. Why? Well, everything about the ownership, the corporate, the board, everyone's known. It's the SEC is all over it. American Stock Exchange, New York Stock Exchange. They've examined from here to Sunday every aspect of who are the human beings involved, not an area where nefarious activity takes place. So big companies are exempt. Registered investment advisory firms are exempt. Same reason, they're regulated by the SEC. Venture capital funds advisors are exempt from filing under the Corporate Transparency Act. Insurance companies, because they're regulated by insurance commissioners, insurance producers, you know, they got their fingerprints, they have background checks, they know who they are. Do not have to comply under the Corporate Transparency Act. Highly regulated financial service companies like banks, credit unions, registered securities brokers and dealers, and regulated trust companies also do not have to be registered. That doesn't mean do I talk about trust? Notice when I said limited partnerships, LLCs, corporations, LLPs, I didn't say trusts. Trusts which are not filed with the Secretary of State are not required to file under the Corporate Transparency Act. However, if a trust owns a company that is required to file, then that trust will be implicated. I'll explain that in a few minutes. Public accounting firms that are registered with under Sarbanes-Oxley to do public accounting. Again, we know who they are. They don't have to be registered. Nonprofit organizations, Red Cross, United Way, things of that nature. The small nonprofits don't have to be registered. Political organizations don't have to be registered. Governmental authorities don't have to be registered. And if an entity is exempt, the subsidiaries of that entity are exempt as well. So if the parent is an exempt entity, David, then a subsidiary of that is exempt, but not a brother, sister. So let me give you an explain. And then there's the one that affects most Vistage members and most people that may be listening with us today on this Zoom conference is what they call the large company exemption. Now, this is, listen, everybody, because I get a lot of questions. This is an and, not an or. You must meet all three of these characteristics to be exempt. You have to have over 20 full-time employees working at the firm. Not 1099 contractors, but full-time employees as defined by state law, not part-timers. You have to have your office located in the good old US of A, and you have to have at least $5 million worth of gross sales. If you have the 20 employees, you're here in the good old US of A, and have over $5 million worth of gross sales, you do not have to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. But it's interesting. I'll talk a little bit about Vistage members and the people with us today. So I own a law firm, all right? Now I have well over 20 full-time employees, all right? My office is in the United States of America. True. And we have well over $5 million worth of gross sales. My law firm, Barth Calderon, is an exempt entity. We don't have to file under the Corporate Transparency Act. But Harry, me, I have 12 entities of my own that hold various pieces of real estate, that own various different securities, own various other investments that I have, that I've done for asset protection purposes, estate planning purposes, and business structuring purposes. All of those do have to file. So although my main law firm does not have to file, all my other businesses have to file. So talking about having to file, let's talk about how we go about doing that. So we're going to talk a little bit to start about new companies that are formed after January 1st, 2024, because when we get through that, we'll have a good understanding of what we have to do for the pre-existing 33 million before January 1st, 2024. So let's form a company. So we'll call it David, Harry, and Paul Co., LLC. And what are we going to manufacture, David? We're going to manufacture widgets, of course. And we have a DBA, Widgets Are Us. All right. So we went to Tallahassee, we went to the Secretary of State's office, and our entity was given birth by the Secretary of State. We're not 20 employees. We're not over 5 million gross sales. No, we're located in Sarasota. So we have to file. So it's the entity is the responsible party for filing. That's very important to understand. We have that entity. Once it's given birth, we have 90 days. It must file. If we're not filed at the end of the 90th day, $591 a day fine. So we must file. What must we tell FinCEN about our company? So first, we got to give them the name of our company. So it's David Harry Paul Co., LLC. And we have to also give them all of our DBAs. So our DBA is Widgets R Us. So we tell them that. Then we have to give them the physical address of our company. Okay, not the lawyer's office, not the accountant's office, not a UPS suite, not a post office box, where our office is located. If our office is located in your house, David, it's your home address, all right? We must give them a specific government-issued identifying number. So the government-issued identifying number for us, for David Paul Harry Co., is our EIN number that we got from the IRS. So IRS 34, blah, 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 blah. That becomes our number. So that is the information that needs to be uploaded to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Now, if we have a single member LLC, which is a tax disregarded entity, so either we have a EIN number that we got for convenience purposes, or it's our own social security number. We pop in our social security number and transmit that. And so now our new entity is now, has to be filed for our new entity. So now we got to go tell them a few other things too. And the complication begins. So now we have to tell them, and these are mandates. Who is the company applicant? All right. So the company applicant is the paralegal. So you came to my office. We formed this entity for you for a million reasons, asset protection, estate planning, whatever else it may be. And Cheyenne, my paralegal, is the one that filed it with the Secretary of State's office in Tallahassee to give it birth. So Cheyenne, the filer, must report on behalf of the company. And if Harry was the lawyer that recommended to you, David, to form this LLC, Harry must report as well. So Harry's now reporting as the recommender. Cheyenne is reporting as the company applicant. If it's LegalZoom is the company applicant. All right. So that's the company applicant, and the company itself is reporting. Now, let me put this out here now for everybody. So although we do all this analysis for our clients, for new entities and for existing clients, and we help them file with FinCEN, there's something that we can't do, but everybody should do. So everybody should go to FinCEN, to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network website. Paul will put that up in the chat. And get what is known as a FinCEN number. It's an option. we can't do this because it's one of those, you know, 10-factor authentications. You know, David, tell us where you went to high school. You know, tell us the color of your first dog, all that other stuff that they have. And then they got to send you stuff to text you, and then you got to put the code in and all the other stuff. But when you do, you send them the following information, because here's what happens, and I'll come back to this. We now need to report to FinCEN all of what is known as the beneficial owners that own 25% or more of our company. So David, Harry, Paul Co. LLC, David owns a third, Harry owns a third, Paul owns a third. We are the beneficial owners. We must report.
And Harry, I just put the FinCEN link in the chat.
Thank you. We must report. So David, what do we got to report? So you got to put down David Perdue, your name, your legal name. You have to send them where you live. Again, not the lawyer's office, not the accountant's office, no post office boxes, your physical address, where you live. And then you must also send them a color copy of your passport, non-expired passport, or a color copy PDF of your driver's license. That has to go to FinCEN in order to report your one-third ownership of our company. If you had obtained a FinCEN number under that account, it would just be David Perdue, one-third, number so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. You'd be responsible for keeping your information with FinCEN up to date, but you don't have to do that address and driver's license and passport over and over and over again. So you report that. So now we've now reported one-third, one-third, one-third. This is the beneficial ownership of our company. If we own less than 25%, we do not have to report that beneficial ownership. And if they're a minor, all right, as defined by state law, that owns 25% or through a trust for a minor or through an ownership of an interest of a minor, they do not have to report, but the parents need to report, all right, until they reach age 18, and then they have to report, and that has to be modified and changed. But there are other questions or other issues, because it's not complete. Not only do we have to report, David, who the beneficial owners are, we also need to report who's in control. So we could have a manager of our LLC. That's not even us. We hired a manager. So they don't have an ownership, but they control our entity. And let's say we had an S corporation that's the manager. Could have been the three of us, could have been somebody else. We have an S corporation as the manager. So whoever controls a limited partnership, the general partner, whoever controls a corporation, whoever controls our LLC must report. If our LLC is being controlled by a corporation, let's examine that. So the president of that company, the CEO, needs to report because they have control of that corporation. The COO needs to report. The CFO needs to report. If there is a board of directors for that corporation that could remove and replace the C-suite players, every member of the board of directors needs to report as well. So, ugh. Now, think about that. It's not only the beneficial owner. So, we can have a 1% ownership interest in a company, but if it's a controlling interest, if it's the only voting interest, and 99% is non-voting economic interest only, that 1% needs to report. So one of the things we did, and maybe you heard it, David, maybe you didn't, I was doing a talk for a Vistage chair on CTA down in Texas, and we use this Texas example to give you some idea of what this encompasses. This is for a new entity. New entities, by the way, are easier than pre-existing entities. So he tells me, you know, down here in Texas, he says, a lot of people and a lot of my members are in the oil and gas business. Everyone in Texas is in the oil business. So he says, and let me tell you how they structure what they do. So they drill an oil well. Drilling an oil well is not a game without risk. There are blowouts, there are fires, people get injured. My God, it's kind of a risky business drilling an oil well. So every single oil well that's done is owned by a separate LLC. So that LLC, of course, is now a reporting entity. And now we report that. And he says, and you know, there are usually four or five investors that invest in that oil well. Every one of them is an LLC. So it's owned by five LLCs. So all the beneficial owners of those five LLCs, the managers of those LLCs, all need to report as well. We're in one oil well right now. Now, typically, many of those LLCs are held by higher level holding companies. So, because, you know, it's we call it the Purdue Holdings, has in five LLCs that invest in five different oil wells. So Purdue Holdings also has to report. And then because you've done some good estate planning and proper planning, you have your holding company, David, that's held by your living revocable trust. All right. Most of us have living revocable trusts, plus there are asset protection trusts and children's gifting trusts and potentially debt grant trust, the dynasty trust, all these trusts. Now, remember I said trusts are not reporting entities, but if they hold more than 25% of a reporting entity, we now have to report the following. Who created the trust? Because the trustee can move, that the creator sometimes has the power to substitute assets in the trust. Who were the trustees of the trust? Who were the beneficiaries of the trust? If you look through, if there's a beneficiary has more than 25%, they need to report. Sometimes there's a trust protector. Sometimes someone holds a power to shift assets, you know, and it's called a power of appointment in a trust or a voting trust. All of them need to report. Now, I saw something crush by. I said about a husband and a wife. Husband and wife are aggregated together. Husband owns 15, wife owns 15. It's 30%. They're reporting entity. So all of those entities, all of those structures all come to play. So on our simple oil well structure or simple business structure, we could have close to 20 or 30 different owners and reporters that have to report that information to FinCEN, and it must be complete. No exceptions. So what does that tell us? So that tells us a few things. It tells us that in looking forward, if we're a reporting entity, we need to build in part in our partnership agreements, in our LLC operating agreements, in our shareholder agreements, the steps that are involved to make sure, as we are responsible as an entity, to make sure that we are in compliance. What are the procedures? All right. If we want to bring in a new member to our LLC, if we're all going to dilute, so Harry, Paul, and David, want to bring in a fourth one, now we're 25, 25, 25, 25. We need to report that change that comes. We need to make sure we do it. And I think all of our corporate documents, our LLC documents, our partnership documents need to have new language in them that every person who's a shareholder and or a member or a partner agrees to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. And that's compliance. But it's important to note, and again, this is not a commercial for lawyers or my law firm, that this is not a simple task. It could be very, very simple. But as I explained to you, for most cases, most of the people that you and I will be interacting with, David, it's not so simple. There's trusts are involved and things of that nature. So, and given the fact that, for example, even the AICPA, the CPA Association, has told the CPAs, don't touch the Corporate Transparency Act, we consider it to be the unauthorized practice of law, because we have to determine ownership, we have to determine control, and we have to be sophisticated enough to understand the most sophisticated estate planning and asset protection documents and trusts. Because if we don't understand all of that, we're not effectively able to report, and there are no exceptions. At least at this point, there are no exceptions. So I think, and not only that, failure to comply could be a felony. So I think we'd like to have attorney-client privilege associated when we're putting it together. And it's not that expensive, as I told you earlier. We've $595, for example, my firm will do the analysis and $250 to file it. And yet, but one of the great advantages, and there's also a question that you have, is not an advantage, is that this is not an annual filing. It's one and done. Once we have David Harry Paul Co. LLC registered with FinCEN, we're done. And it's David and your FinCEN number and Harry and my FinCEN. It took me about 20 minutes to get it. And Paul's FinCEN number. We have to keep our FinCEN numbers up to date where we live. Because if you move from Florida to Alabama, you're going to have a new address and a new driver's license needs to be reported to FinCEN. Your number would remain the same, but your internal information, you have 30 days to do that under current law.
Yes, Harry, David, do you want to ring up that one question that pertained to what Harry's talking about?
So real quick, Harry, there's two questions. One is, we are a U.S. subsidiary of an overseas company. They own 100% of the U.S. company. They, in turn, are owned 79% by a nonprofit. Do we only report back to the parent company or back to the nonprofit? Question mark.
Well, I don't know who you're saying who they report to, but here's the deal. If they don't fall under an exemption, all right, because the company that's doing business here is not the nonprofit. They're owned by a nonprofit. So if the nonprofit is an exempt entity, which it is, then the subsidiary, if it was a wholly owned subsidiary, wouldn't have to report. But this is not a wholly owned subsidiary. This is a partially owned subsidiary. So also all foreign companies, if they have a basis here, if they're authorized to do business in the United States. So for example, you could be a company in France or a company in Belgium or a company in Japan or China. You come in here into the United States and you form an LLC in order to do business. All right. If that company in the United States doesn't meet one of the exemptions, doesn't have over 20 employees or 5 million, is a reporting company. So there's the answer to that question.
Okay. Next question is the information submitted to FinCEN public record? And what about, and then I would add to that, what about FOIA requests and government, further government overreach with more government coming in and getting those records?
And Harry, can I say one thing? On the FinCEN side I'm looking at right now, there's in red an alert. FinCEN has been identified that there's fraudulent attempts to solicit information from the people and entities who are supposed to be reporting. You mentioned correct, it. You correct. Knew it was coming. It's here.
I'm going to talk about that as well when we talk about some of the areas that we have to watch out for with information floating all over the place. But the answer to the question is it public? The answer is no, it is not. This is not, absolutely not, a public registry. This is for law enforcement purposes only. So allegedly, when we're dealing with the government, the only people that can access this would be law enforcement. Medical doesn't have to just be the United States government. We could share that information with the UK, with France. If they're looking for financial criminals, remember, it's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network of the United States Department of Treasury. Same people that are enforcing the foreign bank account requirements. It's exactly the same people. So they're looking, again, it's a criminal, it's designed to ferret out criminals, which...
So I have a question. So you're you're familiar with Interpol?
Oh, sure I am.
Okay. So will Interpol and those entities have access to this information?
Well, they will have access to it if it's granted by the United States government. The answer is yes.
But then there's no protection outside of that?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope, Interpol, other governments, that's what it's all about. Now, remember what they're having access to. It's not getting financial information. It's not they're getting access to the company and who owns it? The human beings who were behind the entity. There was the Panama Papers. There was the Pandora Papers. All of those types of things with all these shell companies. I think our president has 18 shell companies. This is what they are after. It's not big company. It's the hair salon that was on the corner that has two hairstylists. That's a little S corporation in Florida is being used by a cartel to launder money and to finance terrorism. They're not concerned about a big company. That's where. That's exactly who owns, Missy's hair salon. That's what they really want to know, who the real owners are, not the people on the paper, but who the real owners are. So let me get back to this for a second. So this is all the things that have to happen within 90 days of the formation of a new entity. And there are no exceptions, none whatsoever. Old entities, all the entities, David, prior to January 1st, 2024, we need all the same information, all by December 31st, 2024. So we need to go through. And you think about the difficulties that over the years, 30 years ago, we do not need, David, the company applicant. We do not need the paralegal that formed it. And we do not need the lawyer that made the recommendation. Everything past January 1st, 2024. But think about it. The company might have been formed 35 years ago. There've been two or three, four sales of stock or transfers of membership interest. People have died. People inherit. People have got divorced. People aren't talking. Partners aren't talking. Members aren't talking. And now we have to provide all this information to FinCEN without any exceptions. This is going to be highly challenging, and some of it won't happen overnight. And what happened, there was an inquiry that was made. What do you do when someone says, I'm not giving that information? I'm just not doing it. Well, the response primarily from the government is buy them out, throw them out. They can no longer be part of your organization, or your organization cannot be in compliance. We can't say that 19 signatories or reporters are there, the 20th won't. That becomes your firm's problem and not our problem. We won't allow you to register. We don't know who that is. That could be the one target that we are after. Now, so let me wax philosophically for a second, and then we'll start taking more questions. And that is, I've been doing this a long time. And like you said, as we were talking about earlier, this is a tremendous, we've had nothing like this ever before in the United States government history. And there's a burden that's being placed on 33 million plus small to medium sized businesses.
And you're assumed guilty before and
absolutely. But the 33 million businesses, when you analyze them, will probably wind up with 200 million reporting parties. Because just like, I wonder, well, I had like 45. And the purpose of that, so that's the burden. And there's going to be some cost. Sure, you could do it on your own, but there's going to be some legal costs that are involved. There's going to be some filing costs that are involved. So you have a burden of time and you have a burden of cost. When you take that burden and you compare that to what their goal is, do I really think this is one man's opinion, this is going to wipe out terrorist financing or money laundering? I think the answer is no. I think they will find a way. They'll use AI. They'll generate things. They'll create documents. They'll create more. They'll create artificial people if they have to. But they will find a way around the Corporate Transparency Act. We will not. We will law-abiding citizens and companies. We will be burdened. And the people that have nefarious activities will still have their nefarious activity. Kind of like the guns. You could take away the guns from the good people. The bad people, they get their guns anyway. They don't care. They don't abide by the law. They're criminals. So the same thing's going to happen here. So you're jeopardizing everybody. The larger is being jeopardized for the small. So that's a typical baby with the bathwater. Now,
it's a haven for identity theft.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the next issue that Paul was just talking about. And so, for example, my firm, we handle thousands of transactions. Now the burden is that we have all of this information coming from David and from Paul and from others to us. We have to analyze it. We have to gather all that information, their home addresses. Some people don't want their home addresses given out. All of their identifying numbers, EIN numbers, perhaps social security numbers that are involved, driver's licenses, passports, my God. And all of that information can only be submitted electronically. So it has to come to us electronically. It better be encrypted on its way to us. We then need to get it off to the Department of Treasury, look at the opportunities for bad actors to intercept information. This is already beginning to happen. Fraudulent ways under, they're saying that they represent somebody on the FinCEN for CTA, and the people give that information to them, and then they use it against them. It is just awful and horrible. So we have data privacy and security that we're concerned with. We have analysis that should be done under attorney-client privilege. But I think it's here to stay, David. I think that we're going to get a law that does extend the time a little bit to 2025 rather than 2024. But that's not the law as it sits here today. So I think that that's important to understand. It's also important to understand that the question comes over and over again. I took somebody asked the question that they had a single member disregarded LLC inside their living revocable trust. So what that does is the single member LLC is a reporting entity. If it doesn't have 20 employees or 5 million gross sales, it's a reporting entity. It doesn't matter if it's a single member and it's tax disregarded. They want to know who are the human beings behind that entity. Behind that entity is held by their trust, then who's the trustee of the trust? Who are the beneficiaries of the trust? Who stayed the trust? So you have just there, you have the entity and the trust as reporting entities, and who controls the entity? Because sometimes a single member entity may be controlled by a third party. If they have enough control, like even if a CFO can make decisions, CFO becomes a reporting party. It's kind of endless. So trusts themselves, no, but trustees, yes. Now we do have some
beneficiaries too.
Yes, beneficiaries.
It goes in, she's asking
You look through that. Yes, you look to the beneficiaries. They are also, remember the goal. Who are the human beings behind the entity? If it's Blue Sky Trust, who's the human being behind Blue Sky Trust? And who controls Blue Sky Trust is what needs to wind up under the Corporate Transparency Act. So, yeah, it gets quite intrusive and quite extensive. And none of us are happy about it. It's just a real beauty. So why don't we do some questions at this point in time? I think everyone's kind of got the picture. Just let me give you one thing that's happening with some pushback. Professional trust companies, like we use professional trust companies in the Cook Islands for asset protection trust, in Nevada for asset protection trust, in South Dakota, Alaska. So, or you have a professional trust company in New York, whatever it may be, and now you have an LLC or a limited partnership that's owned by a trust that has a professional trustee. Now, the professional trustee, the organization, is exempt as a highly regulated financial institution. But you may have four or five trustees that are assigned to your account that can move assets around, dispose of assets, make distributions. Each one of those trustees is a reporting entity. Now, they're pushing back and saying that if the corporate trustee is an exempt entity, then the trust offices should be an exempt entity. And that is currently under discussion at FinCEN. So, but right now, they are reporting entities, the way it stands. Okay, question time.
Yeah, I got one question. Do attribution rules apply to ownership interest in determinations?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Just to follow that one question. So the LLCs and the trust and going down to the grandkids, the kids are the beneficiaries. What if they're under age 18?
Well, if they're under age 18, no. And then you got to look through. If they don't own more than 25% of a reporting entity, they don't have to be reported.
Okay.
So right now, the trust may be a beneficiary. But if you have like six beneficiaries, and their children, and then not one of them is over 25%, that's not reporting. But the trustees are reporting, and the protectors are reporting, and perhaps someone holding power of appointment, and sometimes the person who created the trust is reporting. Because what happens, you know, we can create a trust for David, and then you as the creator of the trust, the settler of the trust, and you can move assets in and out of the trust, or substitute assets in and out of the trust. The fact that you can move that makes you a reporting person. Remember what they're after. Who's moving money? All right. If you can move money and you can move assets, then you need to be a reporting person. Remember the goal. The goal is very important to understand to stay in compliance. Okay, questions.
What if an LLC parent owns 20%?
Well, if an LLC parent owns 20% of a company, then they, and that company is a reporting company. So the here's the LLC parent owns 20% of the underlying company. So the 80% is owned by somebody else. They haven't reached 25%. It's the underlying company's responsibility to report. They wouldn't have to report that 20% because it's below the 25% threshold unless that 20% is a controlling 20%.
Okay. Interesting. Here's another interesting one. Will a franchisor be held responsible for franchisee's compliance?
Well, I think the answer to that is no, because the franchisor is not the one that's responsible for the entity. It's an entity level reporting. So for example, we do work with a lot of franchisees, tons of them franchisees. So the franchisor provides the franchise agreement usually to an individual, and then that individual will assign that franchise agreement to the entity, to the limited partnership, the LLC, or the corporation that's actually selling the hamburgers, making the french fries, or doing whatever the heck the franchise does. So it's the entities, owners, that are the reporting entities, not the franchisor.
Okay. Here's another one. Would it be worthwhile to wait for potential legislation or try to file now?
Well, that's a very good question. I seem to get asked that question every single time we have this conversation. And it's a mixed answer. So the answer is that we can wait. We do know that we have to be in compliance for pre-existing entities now, December 31st, before January 1st, 2024. We have till December 31st, 2024. So sometimes it's simple. You know, it's just a simple LLC. It's owned in a living revocable trust. Not too hard to report. Maybe 4, 5, 6 reporting reporting individuals or entities. If we want to wait a little while, that's fine. If we wait till too late in the year, I think you could get no help to get it done, and you might easily go past the compliance date along the way. On the other hand, if it's here to stay, if you do report it, then there's really no harm, no foul. You just got it reported and it's done. And you can wait. There may be some new legislation, might even be declared unconstitutional. It's just a question of when you get to it. So for example, but with new entities, that doesn't work. Because new entities, I got 90 days from the time it was born to comply. So I have 90 days, but I don't think you would want to start the compliance process in the 85th day. It'll never be done in time.
Right.
And the people ask, how are they going to find out? Well, since every one of these entities are registered with the Secretary of State of every state, every state's going to be sharing that registration process with FinCEN. And everyone that's registered in the state will be with FinCEN. So they will be a cross-check in order to do it. It's a magnanimous task. I don't know quite how they're going to get to it, but the answer to that is yes. More questions.
Yeah. What if an LLC is owned by a human parent and 10% is owned by children? Will attribution treat the parent as owning 30%? What if instead of the children owning 10%, but the spouse owns 10%?
Okay. So the attribution will be as follows. It depends also whether you're in a community property state or a separate property state. So, for example, if we're in Florida, which is a separate property state, one spouse owns 20%, another spouse owns 10%. I say you got a 30% ownership interest, and both spouses report. As far as the children are concerned, minors don't need to report.
Okay.
All right, until they reach the age of majority. So that's kind of a, we don't have to worry about that. They're children,
but
they're children.
But did the parents have to report?
The parents minors? Have to report on behalf of the minors. That's correct. But the minors do not.
Okay.
And so it's kind of a quasi-attribution rule that happens in that respect.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to remind people, I did put a link there. Again, if you want to get with us, complimentary assessment on your own situation, click that link and get connected to Harry and the team. We'll figure this out for you and help you out.
Just have one more. It's a clarification. Just to confirm, every time there is a change to the LLC, whether it's members info, percent of shares, or whatever, after the first filing, there should be a new filing with FinCEN, correct?
That's correct. It's an updated filing to update the information. Address change, ownership change, someone who may not, who had had 20% was not reporting, now they have 25, they are reporting, name change, all of that needs to be reported. And right now under current law, guys and girls, I only have 30 days to do that. One of the changes in the law that's allegedly making its way through Congress is to give us 90 days for those changes, which is more reasonable.
Okay,
do we have any other questions?
I think that's it. You did a great job.
Okay, great. So I thank you all. David, thank you. I hope everybody walked away with a little bit. Remember, this is one of the things that I think there's one more question coming up. Let me answer that question. If an LLC, it went off too fast. Could you read that for me, David?
Yeah, if one LLC member owns 6% but is a manager, must he report?
Absolutely. That's under the control version. Everyone in control must report. All right. So again, what I do hope that everybody has a good perspective and a good picture of what this is all about. And the old story, David, of the Greeks, if you don't like the message, don't kill the messenger. I'm the messenger. My job is to make sure that everybody that takes the necessary steps to be in compliance. It's one and done. It's not horrible. It's a noble purpose. I just hope it works. All right, guys. And with that, I'm going to sign off. Thank you all
very
much.
Thank you.
David, thank you very much. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.